From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At least 28 people were killed and 40 injured today in a massive explosion in Baghdad. This week marks the one-year anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. A year ago today, President Bush issued an ultimatum to Saddam Hussein.
All the decades of deceit and cruelty have now reached an end. Saddam Hussein and his sons must leave Iraq within 48 hours. Their refusal to do so will result in military conflict, commenced at a time of our choosing.
And within days, the invasion began, with more than 100,000 American troops still in the country. The battle for Iraq's future goes on. It took 3 weeks to oust Saddam Hussein. It could take years for the unrest in Iraq to end. More than 550 U.S. troops and 3,000 Iraqis have been killed. Many more have been wounded. Iraqis, Americans, and the world are toting up the costs and the benefits. Tonight on Point, judging the war in Iraq. We begin in Baghdad, where a huge blast today ripped through the Mount Lebanon Hotel in the Al-Qarada district of the Iraqi capital. Michael Ware is covering the story for Time magazine. He was at the hotel site. I asked him to describe what he saw.
It's a scene of some insecurity at the actual blast site of the Jebel Lebanon Hotel. It's absolute pandemonium. Even 30 minutes to an hour afterwards, it was still a chaotic situation as people scrambled for survivors, as security forces, both Iraqi and U.S., attempted to gain control of the scene. It was absolutely devastating. There is an enormous crater, perhaps 10 to 12 feet deep, as much as 7 meters wide. This was a devastating impact.
Michael, at this point, what's known about exactly what happened?
Well, very little at this stage. Iraqi government officials and some witnesses from the neighborhood were talking about this being the result of a rocket or missile attack. However, the evidence on the ground at this stage does not tend to support that. And the U.S. military, after its initial examinations of the site, and I was there with the explosive ordnance team as they were doing this, their assessment appears to be that it is a car bomb, that this was anything from 500 to 1,000 pounds worth of ammunition and munitions and ordnance, including large artillery shells that have been piled together and detonated directly out the front of this small Iraqi hotel in a very narrow street in a residential area. And standing in that crater, I could not help but think back to the UN bombing last year. It has all the hallmarks of the same traits. It was 1,000 pounds of scrounged munitions which were set off on a flatbed truck. The crater was very much reminiscent of that. It's like a nightmare rerunning in some ways.
Michael, why this hotel? Who would appear to be the target, or what would appear to be the message of this target?
That's something that's still being tried. People are attempting to establish. There's confused reports. There was some information on the ground that the hotel was either sparsely populated or had very few guests at all, and that most of the casualties came from the homes that surround it. However, others were saying that yes, people were in the hotel, there were residents. It, by and large, is an Iraqi hotel, clearly distinguishable from the larger, heavily protected hotels favoured by most Westerners. However, what we do find is that even in these cheaper, less protected Iraqi hotels, foreigners are staying in very, very small groups or alone. And so far, we're having unconfirmed reports that perhaps there were some Western businessmen who was staying in this hotel.
Michael, was this the only blast in Baghdad today, or was there another hotel hit as well with more Westerners?
I haven't heard of a report of a hotel being hit, but I certainly know that very, very soon before this blast, an American Humvee was hit by an improvised explosive device. It's still the case in Baghdad that the sounds of explosions, the soundtrack of machine gun fire during all hours of the night and peppering through the daylight hours is commonplace. It is nothing to be hearing these things in the distance or in just around the corner in your neighborhood. it's still a very unstable situation here in the capital of Iraq.
What was the scene in front of the hotel at the blast site tonight?
It was terrible. There was much of the building was still aflame. There was a number of cars that had been parked in the street. I counted at least 8 to 10, which were absolutely shattered. In the midst of this very narrow street, it's a very small street with just enough width for 2 cars to pass. In the very middle of the road is this enormous hole from which this explosion has emanated. And it has sheared the face off this 3 or 4 story hotel, and it has absolutely pummeled some of the houses next to it and across the street. Smoke is still billowing from the site. There is great confusion. People are scrabbling to find survivors. Ambulances and fire trucks are still at the scene. It really is a terrible tragedy.
Michael, we don't want to pin too much on this single blast, and yet it falls on the anniversary of President Bush's ultimatum to Saddam Hussein 1 year ago, and nearly on the eve of the anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We've talked with you frequently during this year. As you look out at Iraq today, at Iraq tonight, 1 year after that invasion, how do you do the math? Is this thing working?
Well, on the surface, if you listen to the spin that emanates from the CPA, the U.S.-backed administration here, there's many statistics and figures that they can throw at you to suggest that, yes, in fact, this place is clawing itself back to its feet. Yet as I'm sitting here speaking to you in the suburban house where I live, I've just heard 2 more explosions. There is a seething underbelly here in Iraq. Whatever achievements we're making, it's almost as if it's 1 step forward, 2 steps back. Any election, any handover that is coming in the near term can at best be cosmetic. It will very much only be on the surface. The deep divisions here, the violence that's coursing through this place, and the terrorist activity and the resistance movement still very much persist. In fact, they dominate most people's lives, or certainly it's foremost in their thoughts.
Well, a terrible night in Baghdad with a terrible blast and too many casualties. Michael Ware, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Michael Ware is a correspondent for Time magazine. He spoke with us from Baghdad. Tonight we are assessing the war in Iraq 1 year on. Is the world safer? Are Americans safer? And what's the outlook for Iraqis? Is the Iraq project on track? Will the Iraq war help re-elect President Bush or usher a Kerry administration into the White House? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me in the studio tonight is Barry Posen, professor of political science at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he's affiliated with the Security Studies Program. He's author of Inadvertent Escalation, Conventional War and Nuclear Risks, and The Sources of Military Doctrine. Good evening and welcome, Barry Posen.
Good evening.
With us from McLean, Virginia, is Ren Rahim Franke, Washington representative of the Iraqi Governing Council and founder of the Iraq Foundation, a group that opposed Saddam Hussein's government and advocated for democracy in Iraq. Good evening and welcome, Ren Rahim Franke.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining us. And with us in the studio is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Great to have you here, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
Ren Rahim Franke, first to you. We are nearly at the anniversary of the invasion. You have supported democracy in Iraq for many years and the ouster of Saddam for a long time. How are you judging this war 1 year on?
I think that the important fact for the Iraqi people is that the regime of Saddam Hussein is no more, that they have emerged from 35 years of tyranny, of totalitarian dictatorship, out of darkness. This was an essential precondition for the survival of the Iraqi people and, indeed, for the survival of Iraq as a country and as a nation. To me, that is an unmitigated good. And when I measure the achievements or lack thereof over the last year, that is what I measure against. What would the Iraqi nation have been had Saddam's regime continued, if it were to continue for another 5 years, for another 10 years, which it was likely to do? Is this something that happened that was good for Iraq and the Iraqi people? And I can tell you categorically, the departure of Saddam is an absolute good for Iraq.
Ren Rahim Franke, we're learning at the same time that the departure of Saddam is not the whole picture here. U.S. authorities and the coalition have seen how difficult everything after that departure has been. You say it's his departure was a precondition for the survival of the Iraqi people. But what about the aftermath of that? Is that all that was required of the war? What about the rest of the agenda?
No, indeed. This was not the only thing that was required. As far as the U.S. administration was concerned, and certainly as far as the Iraqis were concerned, that was not the only thing. The Iraqis needed and still need to establish good governance, a government that is participatory, that recognizes Iraq's diversity, that is democratic, that is pluralistic. And this is a project that is still in the making. We're not there yet. But at the same time, you have to compare it to the 35 years of oppression that Iraq has lived under, the fact that there was no politics in Iraq during Saddam's regime, there was no political discussion or debate, and essentially the entire nation was disenfranchised. What we need to measure is what Iraq was like under Saddam and what Iraq is like and is likely to become in the future without Saddam Hussein.
Barry Posen, here's the voice of one Iraqi, many years in exile, but nevertheless very involved in the politics of Iraq, saying the war got rid of Saddam. Really, that's the precondition for everything that must follow. Therefore, the war is a success. How do you look at it?
Well, I think at this time, the war looks very much like a success for the Iraqi people, and it's hard to argue with that assessment. Saddam was an evil dictator, and he ran an awful regime, and many Iraqis suffered at his hand. But the larger question has to do with U.S. interests, and in the ultimate sense, in other words, what does that level of success mean for us? And then second, the question of whether or not having removed Saddam, the Iraqi people are going to move forward to establish a democracy, remains an open question. I mean, this solution that Ambassador Franke has discussed has eluded us in Bosnia for almost 9 years. There's no reason to believe that it's going to be any easier to get to in Iraq. And then the second question, and it's a tragic one, and it's one that we all hope does not happen, is the fear of some American intelligence agencies, as we hear, that this country could break out into civil war. And a civil war would also be a very awful thing and very dangerous to the survival of the Iraqi people. So from the point of view of even the welfare of the Iraqi people, much hangs in the balance right now, and much depends on successes, recipes, ideas that haven't really been invented yet. We don't really know how to reconcile the three principal groups in Iraq who seem to have some significant differences among them. So that's still an open question. Now, from the point of view of the United States, there's a whole other set of questions. We did not go to Iraq, as I understood it, for the purpose of creating a democracy in Iraq as the preeminent reason. I'm not sure that President Bush could have convinced the American people to support the war had that been the reason. The president connected the war to the war on terror, and he claimed that Saddam Hussein was a great supporter of terrorists, and that Saddam Hussein was in the business of generating weapons of mass destruction, and there was no other way to assure ourselves that this was not true other than to invade. And this turns out to have been false. A lot of people doubted even then whether there was this great connection to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, including the president, it turns out. On the question of weapons of mass destruction, we haven't found any, and we had a much less violent, much less costly method in place to try and assure ourselves about the WMD once we got the United Nations inspectors back in. So the point of view of the cost and benefit to the American people, we have soldiers getting killed almost every day. We've had many killed already, many wounded. We've spent vast sums of money. We're going to be there for many years to come. The question of the security gain to the American people, I think, is very debatable.
Well, there's an Iraqi view saying we got rid of Saddam. There's an American view saying the picture is bigger than that and the outcome is debatable. Even the cohesion of Iraq still debatable tonight, but we're looking at the impact, judging the war in Iraq. You can join the conversation. Barry Posen is with us, Ambassador Ren Rahim Franke and Jack Beatty. Is the world a safer place almost 1 year after the invasion? Is the Iraq project on track? Is it close enough? John Kerry says we're bogged down in Iraq. Dick Cheney says democracy will rise. Which is it? Can it be both? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Almost on the anniversary of the U.S. invasion on the war, on the anniversary of President Bush's ultimatum to Saddam Hussein, we are judging the war in Iraq tonight. We invite you to join us. Did you support or oppose the invasion 1 year ago? Where do you stand tonight? Will the Iraq war reelect George Bush or defeat him? Have American troops been asked to do the impossible or the necessary, the doable? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT, and from McLean, Virginia, by Ren Rahim Franke, Washington representative of the Iraqi Governing Council. From opposite sides of the country and the political aisle, Vice President Dick Cheney and Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry traded barbs over the one-year anniversary of the Iraq War today. Here's what John Kerry had to say.
We're still bogged down in Iraq, and the administration stubbornly holds to failed unilateral policies that drive potential, significant, important, long-standing allies away from us. What we have seen is a steady loss of lives and mounting cost in dollars to the American taxpayer with no end in sight.
Senator John Kerry speaking earlier today at George Washington University in California. Vice President Dick Cheney presented a different view.
We still have work to do in Iraq, and we will see it through. Our forces are conducting swift precision raids against the terrorists and regime holdouts who still remain. The thugs and assassins in Iraq are desperately trying to shake our will. Just this morning, they conducted a murderous attack on a hotel in Baghdad. Their goal is to prevent the rise of democracy, but they will fail.
Vice President Dick Cheney speaking earlier today at the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California. Jack Beatty, here's the spectrum of views, from Republican to Democrat, from Iraqi to American. Trying to judge this war in part depends on where you stand and what your own future interests depend upon.
Indeed, and on what you count and how you count the cost. And, 567 American deaths, 3,250 wounded, an estimated 10,000 Iraqi deaths. But for me, this comes down. I just discovered the day before yesterday that the nephew of a friend of my family died over the weekend. His name was Daniel J. Londano. He lived in Dorchester, Massachusetts. He was 22. He was a veteran of Kosovo and Afghanistan and a 2000 graduate of Archbishop Williams High School in Braintree. He went to Iraq, as I say, after this other service. He didn't tell his mother that he was going to be going there until the last minute because he didn't want her to worry. His aunt, my friend Mirka Kozakowski, said, "You couldn't ask for anyone better in this world." His sister said he was the most good, loving brother who always protected her. She knows her brother was proud of his service, but she doesn't understand why it was worth his dying. She said, Diana Londano said, "I don't believe he should have been there or anyone else. There are just too many people getting killed. It's not worth it."
Jack, we're at the anniversary, and you're making the war's cost very personal there. And for this family and for this soldier, it is personal. How then do you respond when you hear Ambassador Ren Rahim Franke saying, and the thousands upon thousands of Iraqis who died at the hands of Saddam Hussein, this was a godsend for us, the Iraqis?
Well, I think, as Barry said, this really has to depend upon the future. There are too many things in play now. A civil war would be as ghastly, I should think, if it were a confessional war in Iraq as the dictatorship. So much depends upon what happens. There's a city called Ypres in Belgium where the British salient was for the duration of World War I, and over 200,000 British soldiers died there. And there's an archway in the city today with all their names. And every night at 6 o'clock, a Belgian fireman comes out and it stops the traffic either way, and they play the last post, the taps from the British taps, a gift in perpetuity from the Belgian people to the British people. Let's hope that someday there'll be an arch like that in Baghdad, and that someday in democracy and freedom and peace, there'll be something like taps, and Daniel J. Londano and all the others who are sacrificing will be remembered for the sacrifice they made, not the politicians, not the taxpayers, for this country, Iraq.
Ambassador Rendrahim Franki, when you hear Barry Posen say, yes, Saddam's gone, but that's not enough to qualify this as a successful war for America in largest terms, when you hear Jack Beatty point to the sacrifices of individual American soldiers dying and stack that up against the removal of Saddam, how does it look to you?
First of all, let me say that since April last year, I have also known people who have died in Iraq. And I have known Iraqis, and I have known Americans. And if you remember recently, an American young woman was killed in Hilla. She was a wonderful woman. I knew her, and I had worked with her quite closely on a number of issues. She was a brave woman. I can assure you that these deaths, whether they are American or Iraqi, hurt. And that we are all pained by them. So, of course, these personal stories are very important to each and every one of us. And we certainly understand the sacrifice that the U.S. has made in this effort. I agree with Mr. Posen that the job is not done, and that in the end, it is the success or failure of the project in Iraq that is going to determine the value of this endeavor, of this whole war, of this removal of Saddam.
On this night, nearly on the anniversary, do you see that project as on track to success or not?
You have to keep in mind that, for example, in Afghanistan, the war took place in October 2001, almost 2.5 years ago. Afghanistan is still a project in the making. I think it is too optimistic to stand back a year later and look at a country that has really lived in darkness for 35 years and say, why haven't we succeeded yet? It's 12 months already.
No, I'm not asking if we succeeded yet, but is it on track? How confident are you that there'll be a successful, cohesive, unified Iraq?
Yeah. First of all, I want to respond to the discussion about the fear of civil war. I think there are lots of neighbors of Iraq and people outside Iraq who would like to see Iraq fail. And I think those people would be delighted and eager not only to see civil war, but to instigate civil war in Iraq.
You're talking about Iran, Turkey, Saudi Arabia? Who?
I don't want to be specific, and it may not even be states, but mm-hmm. I think it may also be groups of extremists who simply do not want to see Iraq succeed. And they are prepared to go to all kinds of lengths in order to create the conditions for failure. And one of those conditions is civil war. Now, if you look, by the way, the kind of bombings that could have triggered civil war did not start just the other day. They go all the way back to the summer. Remember, in Najaf,
absolutely,
in July, 200 people were killed, including a very important cleric, Sayyid Baqir al-Hakim.
Mm-hmm.
That was followed by other assassinations of both Sunni and Muslim Shia. We had the bombing in Erbil in February, and then the horrible bombing in on March 2nd in both Qadamiyah and in the city of Karbala. All of these are efforts, in my view, to instigate civil war between Sunnis and Shia, between Arabs and Kurds.
And sitting here tonight, what's your level of confidence that the country will hold together?
My level of confidence is very high. Iraqi leaders of all kinds, from all sectors of society, have reiterated that they are not going to fall into that trap. I do not fear civil war. There are problems, definitely. We have many sectors of society, many ethnicities and religions who have their fears of each other. They have their aspirations and so on. And sometimes these fears and aspirations clash, and there are enormous debates about the future. I think these can be worked out. I am not afraid of civil war in Iraq, and I think other people would like to see it happen, but I doubt it will.
We're glad to hear your optimism tonight, and we hope it works out that way. We thank you for joining us. Ambassador Rendrahim Franki, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Washington representative for the Iraqi Governing Council. I want to turn now in Washington to Walter Slocum. He was a senior advisor to Paul Bremer on national security and defense in Iraq. He was in Baghdad from last May to November 2003. He was Undersecretary of Defense during the Clinton administration, 1994 to 2001. Good evening and welcome, Walter Slocum.
Good to be here.
Walter Slocum, we're ambitiously trying to judge this war tonight. There's a lot more to come, but it's been a year. How do you judge the success of the invasion and the aftermath of the war?
Well, first of all, I agree with the observation that for the Iraqi people, this really is out of darkness. But I also think that for the United States and for the countries that are with us in the fight against terrorism, it's also a success. There are a lot of problems. There are a lot of things that could still go wrong. It could all still go badly. I don't think it will, but it could. But if you compare the situation we were in a year ago with the situation today, in terms of the impact of Iraq on regional security, on the proliferation issue, on American security, I think we're better off.
And how has the war in Iraq improved the situation in each of those categories you mentioned?
Well, it's obvious how it's improved life for Iraqis. That's nobody debates that. There's
yes and no. I mean, we do hear complaints about insecurity there.
I'm sorry?
We do hear complaints about Iraqis saying, please let this insecurity end. There are no police. I'm not safe. We do hear that.
No, that is certainly true. On the other hand, the security situation is now that there is a handful, and it's probably not more than a few thousand people, both Iraqis and foreigners. I continue to think mostly Iraqis, from holdovers from the old regime, who are fighting the chance of Iraq being a success. And they were a real threat and a serious threat, and we saw it again today. And there are some outside forces. But the Iraq is now headed in a direction that will make Iraq a vastly better place for Iraqis. But I also think it's relevant that the ouster of Saddam Hussein has made the region, which is a tinderbox for the rest of the world, very substantially more stable, assuming we were able to be successful in helping the Iraqis create a stable and constructive country with a stable and constructive system and a positive influence on regional security issues.
Still a very substantial assumption at this point. Barry Posen, speak to
me. Well, you say that.
Oh, all right.
But, you know, the tendency in the media is to say everything could go wrong, and everything could go wrong. Canada could break into a million pieces. But the issue is, what is the overall weight of the evidence? What is the overall direction? And there are a lot of problems. Things could go wrong, but it's also more likely than not that they will go in a positive direction.
Well, that's exactly what we're trying to get our hands in and feel tonight, what's going on there and the consequences of everything that's transpired there for that country, for the United States, for the world. Barry Posen, how about on these three issues? Walter Slocum says in terms of proliferation, fighting terrorism, and regional security, there's already been a positive effect.
Well, I think on regional security, the jury is out. Saddam was not much of a threat prior to the war. We know that by the relatively small force the Americans sent to beat him. So he was in no position really to invade anyone. From the point of view of the war on terror, I see no net positive and many net negatives. Our coalition against terror is not weakened, and I don't think it's truly weakened. There is some dissension in the ranks. We're probably creating more recruits for al-Qaeda. We've certainly diverted resources to this project. On the question of proliferation, I think this whole argument stands or falls on a very deep history of Libya and why the Libyans have suddenly become cooperative, and there are two views on that. And
the issue of proliferation hinges on Libya.
The main evidence that the Bush administration and supporters cite on proliferation success is the fact that the Libyans have become so cooperative.
They've turned. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the Clintonites would like to say, you know, we've been embargoing this country for years, and there was lots of evidence that they wanted to, you know, that they were moving in the right direction. You know, there's also a question of how much the intelligence find relative to the Pakistanis. I mean, everything's connected to everything else here. But the Bush administration would have you believe that it was the coercive impact of what what happened to Saddam that suddenly elicited Gaddafi's cooperation.
Do you buy that, personally?
I think it's hard to argue that it had no impact. I think that would be silly. But at the same time, there's so many other irons in the fire, so much other force applied in the right direction that I think you want to qualify that as a piece of evidence. And certainly you want to qualify it as retrospective justification for the war. I mean, it's there's some success there, but I think you want to be careful with it. But I also think that Walt Slocum is being I don't want to say overly optimistic, but I think he's dismissing some evidence that is uncomfortable. One bit of evidence that's uncomfortable is that however many thousands of people there are in the resistance goes on. It's organized, it's skilled, it's committed, it's heavily armed, seems to be reasonably well-funded. There's no evidence that we've crack the code of this resistance. We haven't in any sense broken its back. We're in a grueling attrition war with these people, and however many thousands there are, they have thousands more from whom they can recruit, and the place is full of ammunition. That's one. Second, we had to drag these people kicking and screaming to this interim constitution. It's very clear that the Kurdish and Shiite views of how Iraq should be organized in the future are completely at variance. The Kurds want a very, very high level of autonomy. The Shiites seem to want a strong central government. The Sunnis we barely hear from because I think the true political power among the Sunni Arabs is still in the Ba'ath Party, which is in underground. And that's who I believe is fighting us. And we have I have heard so far from the Coalition Provisional Authority no theory about how we're going to break the back of the Sunni Arab resistance and to get them to reconcile themselves to what's happened. So the chances for catastrophe in this country are still very high, and internal civil war is what will drag external intervention and will make images of stable regional security in that area look like pipe dreams.
Walt Slocum, we've just got a minute before the break. Perhaps you can speak to the first half of that, the durability of the resistance, if part of the success of the war is the point at which people, including American soldiers, stop dying. How far off is that?
I think Iraq, most countries, including the United States, will have to deal with an internal terrorist threat for a long time. That's different from whether things are getting better or worse.
You look at the bombing today and the drip-drip death reports of American soldiers, and this is not relevant to whether things are getting better or worse?
No, it's not relevant. It's certainly relevant. But the overwhelming majority of Iraqis realize that this campaign, which I think is wrong to call an insurgency because it's so narrowly supported, this kind of a campaign does not serve Iraqi interests, and it'll go on. I don't think we should have any illusions about that, just as the terrorist campaign in Northern Ireland went on for a long time. But that doesn't mean that it is impossible to create a democratic government, a stable government, and a government that will pull the various factions in Iraq together.
Walt Slocum, Barry Posen, Jack Beatty, stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the war in Iraq, judging the war in Iraq. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tonight we are judging the war in Iraq in the week of the anniversary of invasion there, on the night that President Bush 1 year ago laid down the ultimatum to Saddam Hussein to leave the country with his sons or face war. Iraq got war. How has it turned out? You can join us tonight. What's the road America is now on in Iraq? Is Iraq central to the war on terrorism, or has it been a distraction? Has the invasion of Iraq stopped more terrorists than it has created? And what has America gotten itself into here? Is it worth it? Is it the right thing? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from Washington by Walter Slocum. He was senior advisor to Paul Bremer on national security and defense for much of last year in Baghdad. I'm joined in the studio by Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT. He's affiliated there with the security studies program. Our own Jack Beatty is with us, and a lot of callers want to join. I'd like to turn to them. Mudassar is calling from Weymouth, Massachusetts. Hi, Mudassar. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I need to make a couple of points. I am Iraqi myself, and I am a Shiite, and I was against the war when it started. because my point of view is changing Saddam Hussein has to be an Iraqi people matter. And if you want to help them out, you will be more appreciated. But taking the matter in your hand and invade Iraq was a disaster to the whole region.
So you're saying you were opposed to the war, and how do you look at it tonight, Mudassar, a year on?
It's really miserable. I mean, I talked to my family today, and it's chaos. My brother is an educated person. He's an electric engineer. And his point of view that Iraqis are now for sale by every single promoted power, which is playing the main role in Iraq, unfortunately not Iraqis themselves. And you notice by yourself that the Iraqi council, the governing council, is appointed by the United States, and the interim constitution was created by those people who most of them didn't suffer or didn't do any contribution in resisting Saddam Hussein.
But Mudassar, let me ask you if I could. You must have seen this week the poll numbers that came out. ABC and someone else did a poll in Iraq, rather extensive, and the numbers showed that Iraqis, by rather significant margin, were very glad the United States was there in this poll. What'd you make of that?
I do agree with you. I mean, it's like a realistic result. But if you ask any Iraqis, they would know very well that the one who created Saddam Hussein is American policy itself. So they are aware of this fact as well. The problem I have with the current situation is occupation is dividing Iraqis more than uniting them. The reason for that, each power, especially the Kurds and some of the Shiite and probably some of the Sunni, they trying to get the American on their side or more powerful through American intervention within the future of Iraq.
So from that perspective, you're seeing it as a divisive force there. Mudassar, thank you for your call. Walter Slocum, speak to this issue of the cohesion of Iraq and the forces that are pulling it together and apart, and how the American presence factors into that, if you would.
Well, there's certainly real divisions in Iraq. On the other hand, these are not people who've devoted the last several hundred years to killing each other. They have different interests. They have different perspectives. I think Hadassah is right that the interim constitution is not the end of the story, and the question is how any constitution is implemented, not what it says. But the fact that with all kinds of difficulties and all kinds of reservations, the various Iraqi political forces were prepared to agree on a document that is probably by far the most progressive document not only in Iraqi history, but in the history of the Middle East, that's a positive sign. Does it mean the struggle is over? Certainly not. Does it mean we're on the right course? I think it does.
And Barry Posen.
The world is full of progressive constitutions that nobody paid any attention to. The question, I mean, look, the outcome, it's very difficult to foretell the future. And, it's easy to...
Yogi Berra.
Yeah, it's easy to, I mean, we call our field political science, but I have my doubts. there's smoke, there's a kind of fire. And the circumstantial evidence is there are some divisions in this society. And there's reason for people to hold grudges against one another. There's good reasons for groups to fear other in the future. They're showing the evidence that they fear the others by the fact that they're all arming and organizing just in case they decide they want to fight. And I'm not even sure it's such an optimistic thing to say that few Iraqis imagine a partition of the country. And that's because they all think they can win. In other words, there are civil wars that don't end in partition, but they're a war to the knife because each party wants to win and win it all, and that can be even worse. So, I just, as I said, it's one can sort of adopt this Cassandra-like posture, and maybe that's what I'm doing. But I see a lot of obstacles to success here. And the only way we ensure that the worst doesn't happen is essentially by remaining in country in strength. Right. And that's what all Americans are going to have to understand. We're going to have to remain in the country in strength for a long time, and we're probably going to pay more than a little for the privilege.
Walter Slocum.
That's an issue on which Barry Posen and I really agree. If this is going to be a success, and I think it can be, it's going to take a continued effort. This is not going to be over in a year or 2 years. We may not have 120,000 troops in Iraq indefinitely, but we're going to have a commitment to Iraq and to Iraqi progress and Iraqi security for a long time. And he's right. There are real differences in the society. On the other hand, my impression from my contacts in the country when I was there was that a lot of Iraqis, an overwhelming majority, I would argue, including a lot of Sunnis, believe that this is an opportunity to do it right, and they're prepared to take some risks to do it.
Jack Beattie, here more or less is the message of the Bush administration. Trust us, this will work. Hang in there. It may take a long time. Donald Rumsfeld said that just this morning on NPR. It may take a long time, but it will work. Trust us. Hang in there.
Trust us, this administration, after what's happened. I mean, look what this war has done to us, our people. We went into a war, we now know, on the basis of misrepresentations. The war we're fighting, the occupation Daniel J. Londano and 566 other Americans have died for, is not the war that Mr. Bush promised. It was not a war that the Congress would have supported. We went in on the basis of false pretenses. That was a subversion of the system of our democracy, which relies on giving accurate information and having the people judge. We didn't get that. We don't know to what degree the president and his people were complicit in that, whether they were fooled or whether they fooled us. But that is a grave question hanging over this war right from the start. And the second thing this war has done, look what it has done to us abroad. The Pew people have come out now with a new poll. They can't believe that it's even worse than last year. We went from being at the top of the world in people's sympathy and understanding and admiration at September 11th to being everywhere a curse and a byword because of this war. And any good to come out of this has to be subtracted from that total of world public opinion that has just turned against us.
I have to say I'm impressed by the objectivity of a reporter in Iraq.
I'm sorry, Walter Slocum?
I have to say I'm impressed by the objectivity of someone who thinks he's a reporter.
Oh, are you talking about the Time reporter that joined us at the top of this hour?
No, whoever has just spoke.
Oh, this is Jack Beattie. Well, he's describing the polls that have come out this week from the Pew polling organization that's polled globally.
The United States is unpopular. I am not a great supporter of this administration. I worked for the Clinton administration as well as for CPA. But I think one of the problems here is what I find troubling, let me go back to the Spanish election. What I find troubling is not that people voted against the war. That's a fair issue. What I find troubling is that people think they are going to avoid the risk of being the subject of terrorism by giving in to the terrorists. And I don't know if that's why the Spanish voted. I have no idea why the Spanish voted.
But you're then drawing the same equation that Iraq is indeed a central front in the war on terror. Barry Posen, you've disputed that.
By the way, I don't think that.
Well, then what's the connection to fighting terrorism in the war in Iraq?
Well, the connection with the Spanish election is the terrible bombing in Madrid.
But if you're drawing a parallel between the stick-to-itiveness of the Spaniards and the Americans in Iraq, it seems to say this is all about terrorism in one forum or the other. Barry Posen, speak to that, if you would.
The event which dominated the Spanish elections, understandably, was the terrible bombings in Madrid.
Is that related, Barry, to the Iraq War?
Well, I think in a way it's related to the Iraq War. I mean, it's a whole other show, which I'm sure I think maybe you already had on exactly what happened in the Spanish election. But I think trying to get into the minds of the Spanish voters is very difficult. But I think from my point of view, Aznar created a kind of a credibility gap. He supported the Americans 100% in the Iraq War. Almost none of his people wanted to be a part of the war. This war was portrayed then as having something to do with the war on terror. Aznar claimed to believe the administration's arguments. Nothing worked out quite as was portrayed, and Aznar ended up, I think, further discrediting himself by the fact that nothing did work out quite as it was portrayed, and the Spanish people didn't want to do it anyway. Then there's a terrorist bombing, which looks like, to all the world, like, a failure of the Aznar our government, accompanied by a whole lot of kind of dust being kicked up about who the likely suspect was. And it I think the whole background basically accumulated in the minds of young voters who it probably wouldn't have been expected to vote in the absence of this catastrophe, all basically saying, look, we don't trust this guy on security anymore. Yep. Let's get rid of him.
But I want to step back from Spain. Jack Beatty's saying there's a credibility gap now surrounding the entire United States, surrounding the war itself, because of the way it was sold and what's turned out. That calculus, if we're judging this war, has to come in here. It does matter how the United States is perceived globally. How do you do that calculus?
Look, from my point of view, look, we didn't lose all that many governments as friends from this war. Even the ones that were opposed to it 100% are still cooperating with the Americans in Afghanistan. They're cooperating against terrorism. It's not like there's been a wave of defection from the coalition. But it's always better if you're in a really serious fight, which is what I thought the fight with al-Qaeda was, if everybody on your team is really pulling together and is really satisfied with the leadership. And what the war to Iraq was seen to be in the minds of many European citizens and a good many European leaders was a major diversion. And it has turned out to be true. It was a major diversion for which the rationale was very, very thin. And that makes the members of the team a little worried about the quality of the leader.
I want to get one more call in here. Peter is calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a son in Tikrit, so naturally I'm very interested in this discussion. Mm-hmm. I think there is not a war in Iraq, but three wars. The first was the destruction of the regime mm-hmm. and the seizing of weaponry. The second was rounding up people, killing or capturing them, finding as much weaponry that needed to be destroyed. Both of those two wars I support. The third, however, is the hearts and minds business, which I think will not work because of the gorilla in the room that no one has mentioned is Islam. We are infidels. However many hospitals or schools we build or electricity grids or roads, at the end of the day, we're infidels. There will be no gratitude, or the gratitude will be fleeting.
Does it matter if democracy is born anyway? Can it be born anyway, Peter?
It is not self-evident to me that democracy were to be achieved, and I believe it is a Sisyphean task which uses up men, materiel, and political capital, which might better be spent, for example, doing in Europe today what we had to do after World War II to shore up the forces of anti-communism at a time when the communist parties of France and Italy were the most powerful, and despite Stalin's gobbling up Eastern Europe, communism was on the march, too.
Peter, my time is running down. We wish well to your son in Tikrit, Walter Slocum. Here's the father of a soldier in Tikrit who says that the goal of democracy in Iraq is unachievable.
Well, first of all, I agree about my concern and my congratulations on his son. I think Iraqis want a fair system. They want a democratic system. And there are certainly serious issues about fanatic Islamic radicalism. But it's very important not to tar the whole of Islam with the Wahhabis and the Osama bin Ladens. And I don't think that's where most Iraqi sympathies lie. And that's the campaign we have to wage in Iraq.
With that, we're out of time. And Americans continue to carry on their shoulder this goal of democracy for Iraq and the war. Walter Slocum in Washington, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Barry Posen from MIT with me in the studio. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Jack Beatty, thanks very much for being along. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Mm-hmm.